The holiday season is over, but a new Congress is here, and now is the time for people to submit their wish lists for federal IT. Roger Baker's chief strategy officer at Agilex, former chief information officer at the Department of Veterans Affairs, among other spots in government, and here with a wish list of his own. Roger, it's great to talk to you as always. We have IT reform legislation now in place, but you're suggesting it's the right time for Congress to really apply some oversight and make sure it's implemented right. Where are the possible places that you see, not that things would go wrong intentionally, but that maybe agencies would be slower to implement or less effective to implement in the legislation that's just passed Congress? Thanks for coming on, Roger.
Well, and thanks for having me on, Francis. You know, when you look at the legislation, there are some pretty substantial authorities in there for the CIOs if the departments will let them implement them. So, for example, the authority is there that no IT contract can be awarded without the approval of the CIO. That's a that is a tremendous piece of authority if you think about it, because what the CIO could relatively easily do is set out a series of policies about what he or she expects out of IT contracts. So, for example, one that I would highly advocate is no IT contract will be awarded for unless the program has a delivery schedule for, of production functionality within the year. And if you start doing that sort of thing, then you start being able to implement CIO-type policies without having to directly do them. So you can say, look, I'm not telling you that you don't that you have to deliver within a year. I'm telling you you can't have a contract if you don't schedule a delivery within a year, and start implementing the policies that, frankly, all the CIOs have known that are needed out there, incremental development and other pieces. And so there are some pretty substantial authorities in there if the departments will let them implement them.
There's a key factor, though, that I imagine is woven into that, Roger, and that is once you say that's how you're going to do business, from the very beginning, the very first opportunity, you have to do business that way, or people are going to kind of shrug their shoulders and say, here we go again, right?
Yeah, that it's really all about management support at this point. And I think it goes back to, Alan Blute has published a very good article in Federal Computer Week that I just saw today. It goes back to the ineffective implementation of Clinger-Cohen back in 1996. Now, there's much more teeth in FITARA, but the departments have shown that they can and will not fully implement the law as it's written if it's not the way they believe they'd like to do business in the technology areas. And that's been, 18 years since Clinger-Cohen was done?
Yeah.
How many federal CIOs today actually report to the secretary or the deputy secretary? Quite a few, but certainly not all.
Yeah, that's right. There are still quite a few spaces there.
Yeah.
How much of the effectiveness that you had in setting those expectations was because of the way you set the expectations? And how much of it do you think was because Secretary Shinseki said, whatever Roger says about how he's going to set his expectations is what you're going to do?
I think if I'm being reasonable, I'd tell you 100% based on what the Secretary said.
100% to him?
Yep.
Okay.
I don't believe it's possible for a CIO to go in and exert a lot of influence, even if that CIO has legal authorities, if the cabinet secretary's view is, I don't believe in that, and I'm not going to back the individual up. Secretary Shinseki was very clear that where technology was concerned, I was the person that he was going to back. And that solved 90% of all discussions. You know, in the same way, in other business areas, you know, the doctors were in charge of healthcare, I wasn't. The benefits folks were in charge of benefits. The HR was in charge of HR, but in technology, I was in charge of that. And, you know, having that authority, knowing that if you go in for a discussion with the secretary, you're going to have his backing, lets you then go off and do the things that you know need to get done inside of your area. Now, you better be right, and you better be good, but having that backing lets you get a lot of things done.
Yeah, that strikes me that that's a precarious position to go in, and it takes a special kind of person to want to put him or herself out on the line. Like, because you're right, you better be right, and you better be good, because if you're not one or the other or both, you're really screwed.
Yeah, and you know, and I know we're going to talk a little bit about congressional oversight here in a second.
Yeah, that's where we're going next.
But, you know, just because you have the secretary's backing doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to get the backing of the oversight committees.
Right.
And, you know, so it goes back to you better be right, you better be good, and maybe you better be a little bit nimble in your ability to, you know, to shift the direction you're going if things aren't working quite as well as you'd like them to.
Roger Baker of Agilex reviewing his federal IT wish list for the 114th Congress. And the second item on your list is a bipartisan approach to improving government operations, and you're calling for more productive oversight. What does that look like? Because certainly, I mean, the issues that your agency has, your former agency has come up against are worthy of oversight. But I wonder, when a situation like that comes up, what your view of productive oversight is and what it looks like and what it covers.
Well, I mean, I have to be realistic. We are in Washington, and so politics is going to be involved. But, you know, my view is that when you're wrestling with hard issues, and oversight is necessary and appropriate, and I won't go so far as to use the word welcome, but but certainly necessary and appropriate. But there's a line between we're just trying to find the facts so we can come up with an appropriate path forward, and we're trying to find people to blame so that we can, you know, pin the blame on somebody. And in particular, you know, I've always had this view that, you know, if you go in as a political appointee, then you have by definition accepted the realm of the political. But there are a ton of great career folks out there that get shoved into that political spotlight, and it's not bipartisan. You know, they're not allowed to express what their political views are, but boy, they sure get other people's political views slammed on them when they go up for these oversight hearings. And so, you know, my plea would be for, you know, for kind of that separation. Let's have bipartisan and trying to fix the problem, especially when it's the career employees you're dealing with. As a political, you know, I had to take the view of, look, if you want to slap me around for my political views, I think that's fair. But it sure isn't for the career folks.
Is that the reason that we can expect to see more or continue to see mostly politicals go to the Hill? I mean, the administration has been reticent to send career folks to the Hill, and not just this administration, others have too, to the extent that at the IRS, we only see essentially Commissioner Koskinen because he and the general counsel are really the only two politicals at the IRS. Is that something, a trend that you expect to see continue, Roger?
Yeah, when they can. Unfortunately, you know, with the difficulty in getting people confirmed, you end up with career folks in positions, you know, for long term that that should be filled by politicals. And so you really don't have the opportunity to, you know, to send a political up. I mean, there are situations where the first political that could go would be the deputy secretary. And, you know, for technical issues, that's not who you want to have for the oversight hearing. And so the career folks go. And I think all I'm saying is, you know, if we're really trying to find the solutions to problems, you know, let's keep the tenor there. It's going to be oversight. It's going to have a little bit of a tenor of adversarial. It can't miss, you know, doing that. It almost has to. But something that's really focused on productively finding answers to problems, not just pinning blame amongst people that, frankly, in an oversight hearing, can't defend themselves. I mean, it's almost like, you know, having both hands tied behind your back while you get slapped around. You're not allowed to punch back.
Yeah. You have a lot of experience with the Hill, Roger. Is it your sense that the members and staffs don't discern between career and political because they don't choose to, or because they just have never thought about it that way?
I think, you know, the main thing is there are points that they want to make. Remember, they're elected officials. You know, they're looking to make certain points, and frankly, many of them are valid. But they have to do that with whoever's in front of them, and I think that's part of the issue. Part of it is, yeah, they don't necessarily draw that line between the political appointees and the very senior career folks. I mean, the senior career folks have been around the block. They know what they're going into. It still doesn't mean it's fair.
Well, but the reason that I ask that is because that if they're not doing it because they just haven't thought of it or it's not a priority, that seems like it would be easier to work through and try to fix than it would if they're aware of it and choosing to not pay any attention to who's which.
I think it's more not thinking about it from that perspective. I mean, I know and like, you know, the folks that I dealt with from a Hill perspective, and I was just fine with the way that they interacted with me. I just think that a career person deserves a different approach than a political person does when they're in an oversight hearing.
Roger Baker, the third item on your federal IT wish list for the 114th Congress is a new federal CIO that can lead effectively, you write, and have an impact with the remaining 2 years of the Obama administration. That one's directed more at the White House than at Congress. It seems to me that I'm not picking on the White House because of the White House. It's more because of the calendar. Time's a-wasting to get somebody in to take this or any of the jobs that are coming open.
Yeah, it's a leadership position, and I took a little liberty with the wish list and stretched it into the White House side. But I think
that's okay.
We need a leader in that position, frankly, most especially in light of FATARA, you know, someone who can step out and help the department CIOs see things, you know, help the secretaries see things in a way that is more favorable from a department CIO standpoint. And having no one there doesn't do a lot of good. My particular view is that, especially in the last 2 years of an administration, it needs to be somebody that really understands how federal IT works, you know, somebody who's been through that path. And I just, I think there are a number of good candidates out there, and I would like to see it be somebody that can step in and really help the department CIOs get these things implemented.
I'm sure they have your phone number, but if they don't, I'll be glad to pass it along to them for it.
Yeah, actually, I have been very clear that that I enjoyed my 4 years as an assistant secretary, and I'm not seeking at this point.
And I know they're very nice to you at Agilex. Rogers, great to talk to you as always. Thanks for coming on, my friend.
Francis, enjoyed it. Thank you very much.